So what you said earlier in your presentation, I found really fascinating, was this idea that within the doctrine, and I use that word because Mormons are really tied to the written word and written instructions, the doctrine around garments is really kind of vague in some ways. And it allows for some type of experimentation or personal interpretation and maybe adaptation.
Yeah, and so this is the tricky thing, and I think is one of, at least for the paper that I gave earlier, one of the bigger findings, which is that, yes, there is technically room for adaptation, for you and God to figure out, you know, an adaptation that is appropriate, and then to adopt that adaptation in good faith. But in practice, things are a little trickier than that. Mm-hmm. When we looked at the data, we saw very few people feeling empowered to make adaptations that suited their needs. Mm. We saw more instead people feeling obligated to wear the garment night and day in a more rigid way. And when we asked people, for instance, after you maybe go swimming or mm-hmm. go to the gym or something, you know, how quickly do you put your garments back on? Pull out a rough statistic here. Like 70% of people said that they either put them on within 10 minutes after finishing the activity or within the hour. And there were very few people who waited longer than that. And so there's a sense, and I'm wondering if this shows up in other kinds of conservative cultural issues where we have an absence of dialogue and discourse and mm-hmm. discussion, and certainly a lack of open discussion mm-hmm. and some very taboo topics, that the community ends up defaulting to the rules or the most strict interpretation of the rules. And even if there is, yes, technically flexibility in the instruction, that flexibility is never or rarely referenced in practice, and that many people do not feel empowered to adapt in a way that technically the rules allow for, but in real life practice, when people ever talk about this, which is rare, the rules seem much more hard and fast.
So they err on the side of caution rather than experiment.
Right. And that's largely then what the community comes to expect. The community expects that people who have been through the temple are wearing their garments. Mm-hmm. And that kind of in-group policing, I think, makes, among other things, makes it difficult to find a greater space for experimentation mm-hmm. and adaptation. The fact that we don't talk about it makes it very difficult for people to find space for experimentation and adaptation because nobody's talking about it. Mm-hmm. Nobody's, you know, frequently saying, oh yeah, well, you need to wear your garments, but you know, if you're having your period and it's really not going well, just don't wear them. Or, you know, if you have a yeast infection, you know, give it a break for a few days. Mm-hmm. People are not having those easy kinds of conversation. I wonder if that's maybe similar to the way in which lots of conservative cultures insist on abstinence but refuse to talk about sex and sexuality.
Right.
Right. It's so we default to a very conservative, you know, you shouldn't be kissing, you know, yeah. Right, or like very, very strict and conservative rules.
And in other ways, the sexuality in the body is policed.
Right. And that's, I feel like, an idea that is really kind of evolving and developing out of this survey, is that an absence of discourse in a very conservative community, especially surrounding something like the body, that doesn't create flexibility, it creates rigidity. Mm-hmm. And that rigidity creates a lot of problems.
Mm-hmm. And this is kind of one of these paradoxes that I see mm-hmm. with Mormonism, is that they do have this prophetic bent mm-hmm. that they can be very experimental and very mm-hmm. Willing to adapt in yeah. one area, but then really rigid and follow the rules and very strict written, not just the spirit of the law, but the letter of the law.
Yeah.
And it's this paradox of how do you hold tension there with that? And it seems like garments is one of those areas that's a very material thing in yeah. every sense of the word that you can bring up to think about that. Is that?
I would absolutely agree with that. And, you know, if you're wearing your garments or if you're not wearing your garments, those are very measurable things.
Right.
And you know, within Mormonism, we often, or, you know, fringes of Mormonism critique the checkboxiness of Mormonism. You know, there's a list of things and you just got to do them, you know. And it's very clear to say you are wearing them or you are not wearing them. As Mormons, I think we like the clearness of some rules and expectations, and therefore we default to that very literal interpretation without necessarily being a lot of grace for other challenges. It's also true that men make the rules on garments,
right?
And I'm not sure that there are a lot of Mormon men who struggle to say words like sex in public, who are interviewing women about, you know, their yeast infections and the problems they're experiencing during menstruation and pregnancy and nursing. And so it's like our taboo around other things to do with bodies,
right,
creates like a knock-on effect of issues. It's like we just got to learn to talk about bodies, and maybe that would resolve maybe some issues here.
Maybe that would help. I had one other thought about this idea of women's bodies and men wanting to police them in ways, but that they don't police their own bodies. So is there something that you found? I think maybe the word that kind of comes up that you mentioned before was covenants, about, and that God is a very rule-making God. And but since God is male, and that, you know, males make the rules, how does this idea of covenants and rules fit together with policing bodies, especially women's bodies?
So that's tricky. So Mormon men and Mormon women both, and when we ask people, what do your garments mean to you? The most common response was that they represent covenants. And men said that and women said that.
And by that you mean promises made between promises you and God.
Yeah, and related to keeping commandments, following rules, and commitment to the church, to the LDS church. And so when people were talking about covenants, that wasn't necessarily, men and women didn't have different responses there. They were like, you know, if they were responding, you know, my garments are, you know, evocative of my covenants, or they're reminders of my covenants, they were responding in fairly similar ways, and largely in ways that they had been taught to respond and taught that, you know, this is what garments are about. Garments are about covenants. But this extra issue, it seems the issue of then why women's bodies are policed extra or end up being policed extra, historically, with maybe the rise of the evangelical movement and purity culture in the 80s and 90s, Mormonism latched onto that as well. And it's not that I don't think maybe Mormon women's bodies weren't policed before that. But then this kind of hyper-focus on women and girls and teenage girls as like the gatekeepers of sexuality, and really the ones that kind of make or break this particular covenant to be chaste and or abstinent before marriage and chaste in marriage, you know, becomes then a responsibility of women. And so, you know, many of the issues with, you know, evangelical purity culture find their way into Mormonism, and then end up being wrapped up with garments as well. There's a really great book that just came out called Pure, and then it has a much longer title. But I think by Linda K. Klein, about the evangelical purity movement. And so much of what she said really resonated with mine and other Mormon women's experiences of feeling like our bodies were very heavily policed, and that garments were another way to do that. For women's garments, the lace, men's garments don't have lace on them. And there are some forms of women's garments that no longer have lace, but that's a very, very recent change. It makes the garment extra visible for women somehow, so it's easier to notice or not notice, you know, and that's just one more way that women's bodies end up being extra policed by this extra bit of fabric, which, you know, is probably meant to make them look more feminine, but really makes them more visible through multiple layers of clothing, and then, you know, and then everyone is very clear about which women are wearing garments. Where if a man is wearing maybe a suit and a tie, maybe that's a
you
trickier
never,
thing to see through all those layers.
Yeah, interesting. Well, thanks for clarifying that, because it seems to be a thing that Mormonism gets caught up in ways that other religions don't. I think especially having an embodied male God.
And I think that there are still elements of that be parsed out.
Yeah. Even though they have the Heavenly Mother,
Yes.
and that's becoming more prominent right now, there's still this sense of this male
Oh,
God
yeah.
figure that...
Yeah, I mean, I think that there would be some disagreement as to whether Heavenly Mother, among Mormons, as to whether Heavenly Mother was actually God or not God, and what the body of Heavenly Mother was like, or what the role of Heavenly Mother was like. And that's largely, like, she exists in name only. You know, it's largely a mystery. So
yeah, so it's another area that theology, Mormon theology, is a little bit lacking on, maybe.
Yes.
All right. Well, again, thank you.
No,
appreciate your
thank
time.
You.